Chair of the Human Relations Commission of Orange County, and want to welcome everybody, particularly our new commissioners. We'll go around in just a minute, but I'd like to begin. Mayor signs a signature there. Before we introduce ourselves, and we're going to begin every meeting this way, to remind ourselves of the mission of why we gather. And that is, as stated by in the bylaws, to seek out the causes of tension and conflict, discrimination and intolerance based on race, religion, national origin, ethnicity, disability, age, gender, sexual orientation, socioeconomic status, or marital status, and attempt to eliminate those causes. That's really our goal here. Elliot Singer, who was not reappointed to the commission, reminded us just a few weeks ago that whatever we do, it always should be seen through that lens. That if we can say, yes, that fits one of these criteria, it fits something that in spirit or in a letter that is reflected in this mission statement, then we ought to do it, and we ought to do it with vigor. And so I just think it's a really great way for us to think and appreciate our duties here as commissioners. So with that, I welcome you all. Why don't we go around the room and introduce ourselves, and then we'll welcome the public as well, and just say a word or two about ourselves. My name is Rabbi Rick Steinberg. I've been on the commission since 2013, serving as the chair just the last few months, and I am a rabbi at Congregation Shir HaMa'alot in Irvine, California, on the corner of Michelson and Harvard. And I've been in Orange County 17 years. So,
my name is Mike Hamill. I'm the chief at Irvine, and this is my second term as a commissioner. And I've been chief for about 2 years, but the same amount of time as I have been a commissioner. And with Irvine PD for about 23 years or so, 25 total years in law enforcement. Thank you.
Okay, my name is Kim Doe, Francis. I'm new here. Since April.
Not anymore, you're not new.
She's new.
Yeah.
You're seasoned.
Okay. My name is Janie Lee. I was appointed November 2nd, so I'm brand new. Mm-hmm. And I'm a human resources manager for the city of Garden Grove.
Wonderful. Welcome.
I'm Don Sedgwick, and I was just elected at the selection committee meeting. Mayors in Orange County. I've been, I grew up here in South Orange County. I attended Capistrano Valley High School. So I've been here all my life. I served on the school board in Saddleback Valley Unified School District for 18 years. And was involved in the CIF, Southern Section Board of Directors as well. Had some state involvement with the California School Board Association for a few years. And was the president of the Orange County School Board Association. So I've had a pretty good experience just around Orange County, mostly in education. I run my own business. I have a fashion jewelry business, a wholesale distribution that I've done for almost 30 years. And I have four kids. I've been elected for a couple of years now, the Good Hill City Council currently serving.
Honored to have both of you here.
My name is Bakalada. I'm employed by OCTA and I've been working there in the last 17 years. I'm the ordained minister and originally from Ethiopia. Three kids, grown up, married, and gone.
I have to say, you're very lucky you don't have gray hair. You know why?
What's that?
Four kids.
Oh, well.
Yeah. No gray hair yet. It's amazing.
Three of them in college. I've got one more at home.
Yeah. Congratulations. That's it. One to go.
Yeah. One married. One just got married. So.
Yeah, great. Hi, I'm Carrie Reynolds. I'm a psychotherapist in private practice in Newport Beach. I've been doing that about 30 years. Kind of at the same time I was doing that, I was an administrator for the Coast Community College District, and I ran the women's program there for about a decade. And I've been on the commission since last Christmas, right around that time. It was really fun. I attended the first party. Remember the,
true,
that
yeah,
was
yeah.
the first big party you had.
I'm Jamie Ross, I'm with the Clerk of the Board's office.
Welcome.
Robin Seiler, I'm the Clerk of the Board. I've been with the county for 21 years in January.
Wow.
All those years with the Clerk of the Board's office.
Wow.
Good evening, my name is Norma Lopez. I'm the Executive Director for the Human Relations Commission, and I've been doing this job since February. Now I'm here.
Wonderful. Welcome, everybody. Really glad you're here. We are, as of the last Board of Supervisors meeting, working under a new set of bylaws, we are going to figure it out as we go along, and really with the help of the Board of Supervisors, Chiefs of Staff, and the Clerk of the Board, and a number of other people, trying to figure out what all those new nuances mean, and we're going to discuss a little bit of that tonight, but we are really looking forward to what the future holds with regards to all those changes. It doesn't change any of the core work, but administratively and in some other ways, we just need to be really thoughtful about how we approach all those changes. So that said, has everybody had a chance to review the minutes? Well, can you pass that down to the mayor? Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So, Mr. Chair, can
yes.
you start those you can read? The items individually
oh.
before you
manage
to take it, so
I'm learning. Thank you.
That's okay. No problem.
Okay. Item two is to approve the commission minutes.
For each agenda item.
Yes, each
right.
agenda.
Got
she
it.
Has to call each agenda item.
Got it. Okay. So, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
A second?
Second.
Okay, seconds. Is there a discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? One abstention.
I mean, you too, because I wasn't present meeting, right? So I can't vote on the minutes, right?
That's correct. Two abstentions.
Right, but then I wasn't appointed, so can I vote?
Vote.
Yeah, I read it.
We'll take. You read it.
Yes.
She can read. Let the witness reflect. She can read. Excellent. Thank you. Next item.
Oh, okay. Item number three is the monthly summary of commission activities.
Excellent. This gives us an opportunity to look at what's taken place in the last month. Becca, if you would please walk us through that on page
8 and 9. There are about 7 items on these summary activities, starting with the police and the community relationships. The staff facilitated 1 PCRP mediation case, and also staff has began dialogues at Kerry Medium School in Tustin, and currently has 14 youth attenders. I would like to just read the summary. I don't want to go through the details. So on this topic or in this title, we have also the commission director participated and contributed to future planning for the sheriff interface and council meetings. Well, the second point here, or the third activities, we do have intergroup relations and relationship building, community outreach, and presentations. Staff led a hate crime prevention and also substance abuse prevention conference, and it is our staff that is handling all this throughout the month. And also the staff facilitated the community building cycle women's group, including we have also participated on a diverse community panel for Sheriff Academy training. Well, the third part is Hate Free of Orange County campaign. As we see here, commission staff responded to 1 hate crime and 1 hate incidents report from OCSD. The commission staff also collaborated with the California Association of Human Relations Organizations in organizing the November 9th so-called CAHRO conference that Commission Chair and the commission executive director will be attending. The commission staff facilitated a hate crime prevention workshop in Spanish at a human trafficking survival event. The fourth point of the fourth event in our list here, commission director one-on-one meetings. As you see, the commission director have attended or participated or met with different group of people as it's listed here. There's also staff training which has taken in this event or this period. The staff attended White Army training. Commission staff attended a 6-hour training where attendees received tools on how to create respectful and safe spaces, diverse viewpoints, and about important community issues. The staff also had to get some training on peace officer standards and training. In the last one, currently all commission staff are post-certified at this point. It's important for our staff to get involved in such programs. So community building trainings, Sharif and Academy training. The commission staff facilitated cultural diversity and sensitivity training for 60 police recruits this month. Duplicate smart trainings. Commission staff facilitated an implicit bias training at Laguna Beach High School for 10 history department facility members.
Thank you, sir. Since many of us are new here, let's just take the opportunity to maybe each meeting to go through two or three of the programs that we do. And so, Norma, would you mind just expanding police community reconciliation program, so our new commissioners know what that is, and maybe Hate Free OC. Just to give us a little sense of what we're doing.
Sure. So through our county contract, we have a certain number of cases that my staff member Don Hahn has to facilitate, and that's through the police community reconciliation program. And what that is it gives an opportunity for community members who might have any grievances with law enforcement officers to report those to us, and we connect with the law enforcement agency that might be, you know, that might have been reported. And Don is able to facilitate a mediation or conciliation between both parties. So that's what that program does. And we currently, through our contract, serve the Orange County Sheriff's Department.
Norma, can I ask a question on that?
Yes.
So these grievances, do they need to be hate-related grievances? I mean, any grievance at all.
And we can get them directly from the person who, from the community member, or actually we also get referrals from the departments.
And why would we see that as our role to field grievances against the sheriff department if they're not, you know, towards our mission? I'm just trying to understand. Because people get all kinds of different grievances, right, about something that they don't agree with.
It's a police community relations aspect of the work that we do.
Kind of like what we see a lot of around the country,
right,
with, you know, some of the disconnect,
right,
between communities and the law enforcement.
The mission's really fallen into three basic areas of work for the commission. First is to report and deal with and try and prevent hate crime. So that's a big piece of what we do. Second piece is police community relations.
Oh, okay.
Because it is completely intertwined with all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of the go-to place where there's conflict in the county. Oftentimes, Norma will get a call, there was a racist incident on campus, or there was, we want to be taught on implicit bias, you know, in the classroom or on the football field or whatever it is. And so they'll go in the south and go in and do a training to help alleviate and facilitate that conversation.
So part of our goal, I guess, is to really try to extend ourselves out there so people know that this service is available. Like, for example, I didn't know that it was available, you know.
Right, so there's preventative
involved.
And then there's the responsive side. So
right.
where the preventative is most of the trainings and the outreach we might do,
outreach,
school,
yeah.
school campuses and communities.
Thank you.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, but you're hitting on a really important point, which we'll get to when we talk about the strategic plan, is that how do we get the word out there? I mean, if a mayor of a major city in Orange County doesn't know that service exists, that's important information for us to have. Carrie's been saying that a long time. How do we get that voice out there, you know? And so.
And we've had reports by this commission to our city council meeting, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
So just the hate B and C campaign is something that the commission endorsed back in December. And this was a campaign that was put together by the Human Relations Council, which is the nonprofit that houses our contract. And it was really in response to an increase of reports of hate incidents that were coming from different sides to our agency. As you know, the commission is the one that reports, tracks, and responds to hate crime. So with the increase that was we were seeing at the end of the year, this campaign was launched. And it's really a public awareness piece. And right now, the council was able to launch the social media component of this campaign, and it's Facebook, videos, things like that. Part of what the commission staff has done, it's mostly the outreach and going out to communities and doing hate crime prevention presentations and outreach. So it's really about building the awareness that we're here, that people are able to contact us and where to go if they want to report something.
Excellent, thank you. Thank you. We're going to do that every meeting, maybe forever, because that insight is really important on an ongoing basis.
Can I just share, there's an addition for those who
yes.
have seen this report before. I added something to the report this month, and it's page number 9. It's a matrix. And I added this because we've been talking about the different activities that our contract with the county required us to do. So this is a list of the activities that we are responsible for. And when I mean we, commission staff go out and do this, but also it's ensuring that the commissioners are informed that this is the work that's being done out in the community. So I want to make sure that you're able to keep an eye out on these are our responsibilities, what our goals are, our expectations, and where we are currently. So there might be some modifications as we go along, but I want to make sure that this was, you were able to see it, and visually, you'll be able to see if we're hitting our marks in our contract, if we're meeting our goals.
And the year is July to June, or is it?
It's July 2017 to the end of June in 2018.
So it's fair to say that we are more than halfway to date to reach most of the goals listed here.
Yeah,
so
which I just made a note that I might add another column where we might be able to see if we've met the goal or not, so it'll be easier to identify.
One question, Norma. On the police community reconciliation cases that we're talking about, how many of those are generated by members of the public who reach out to the commission versus departments who are maybe dealing with the situation and then reach out to the commission for assistance?
I'm going
to
ask Don to answer that question. Hi, Don.
This is Don Hahn. He's one of our three staff members of the commission.
I think 1/3 coming from the public and 2/3 coming from internal affairs.
Do you see, and you don't need name departments, but do you see more departments using or having awareness of the commission more so that other departments are reaching out more frequently than maybe some of the police?
The sheriff department, for example, no more, and so they're using our services more in the sense that I think it's coming from the sheriff herself. To like, for example, when we went to introduce ourselves to the sheriff department management team, she mentioned that make sure you use the program.
Yeah,
so I get quite a bit of a call from them.
And it, yeah. Is the idea that internal affairs then of that particular department doesn't use their resources and whatever the adjudication is that is of the OCHR program is the way it results?
Yeah, so this is a low level complaint that could possibly be mediated. and they'll look at it and they'll determine, well, maybe human relation staff should help with this case instead of, if it's a higher level complaint, I don't get
you
done.
You know, just something I'm thinking about as far as, again, spreading the word about the mission and the services, and to your point, Mayor, I don't know when the last time people from the commission came to an Orange County Chiefs meeting to just sort of give an overview of the services that are provided, highlights of the programs that law enforcement benefit from, but probably, you know,
reporting hate crimes.
Right, we should get on the agenda for Orange County Chiefs Police meeting, and so I can, you know, offline help
that's
with that.
Awesome.
So.
That's great. Thank you. Any other questions about the activities? Jamie, do you have
any? Hey, I guess I do.
Sure.
So what do you do? So like when you have this lower level conflict that's brought either by the public or by someone from the police department or sheriff, how would you resolve it? Do you sit down with the with both parties and try to mediate a solution between the two?
Yes, sir. So the mediation process, both parties have to agree and voluntarily agree to mediate their conflict. And I serve as a third neutral party to walk them through all the process. They themselves come up with their own resolution and agreement. And like I said, not all cases come to an agreement, but at least they have a place where they can communicate with each other.
With somebody that moderates. So you're kind of a moderator.
Yes,
helping them to work out amongst themselves.
That's right.
I give an example of a case that is unraveling or kind of unfolding now in my department, and it might be candidate for a referral. So there were two African Americans in their 20s, and somebody called about them. They were sleeping in their car, and it was late at night, and somebody in the public was concerned because it wasn't sure why they were sleeping in their car at 2 o'clock in the morning. So also go out to check it out, and it turned out that they lost their car key. So it was completely innocuous, but during that encounter, the officer smelled marijuana, asked for consent to search the vehicle, found a little bit of marijuana, and ultimately there were no citations that were issued, and the officer gave a warning, and that was the end of the contact. But that then, what happened was those two young males, they felt like they were harassed without cause and had some questions. And so that's an issue where, you know, when you break it down, you know, probably no policy violations on the part of officers, but it raises questions about perceptions and whether or not maybe better communication could have occurred. And so that's where Don would come in and help out.
So they felt they were profiled. And then when they sat down with the moderator, what was the resolution?
Well, I'm saying that hasn't happened yet.
Oh,
this
okay.
is just a case, a prospective case that I might
yeah.
end up talking to Don about.
And then what would they resolve? I mean, in an example like this, what type of a resolution might be achieved?
Go ahead.
I actually have a similar case in the past that it was a traffic stop, and it was at nighttime, and the officer stopped his car because it was the front windows were heavily tinted. So the person filed a complaint saying that he was being profiled because he was driving and he's African American. And when the officer asked him, well, when they both agreed to have mediation, during the mediation, the officer stated that he pulled him over because of the tinted window and also at night. And the officer expressed that he wouldn't have known who was driving that car of, you know, race and ethnicity. So it bring a perspective of why did the officer pull that person over and have allowed that person to understand, and having dialogue with the officer about, in his lifetime, he had experienced numerous times that he was being pulled over by the officer, but that particular case wasn't the case. So they come up with resolution and understanding that, hey, you know, it was my mistake. Or during the process, there's no need for the officer or the person who filed a complaint to to make an apology or anything like that. It was just an opportunity for people to communicate and clarify all the misunderstanding and come up with resolution moving forward.
More for communication.
Yes, sir. We provide a lot of safe space. I mean, one of the programs I'm most proud of is one that Norma did. We went into the inner city and would meet with four or five mothers or families and bring a street officer in to talk about each other's fears. And, I mean, brilliance came out of it, and understanding came out of it, and think about the police officer pulling over somebody. A mother doesn't think about that perspective, right? And then a 25-year-old male officer who doesn't have children doesn't think about worrying about his children every night going out. So just that understanding is so deeply important. So, excellent. Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. This is where you have your public comments.
Yeah.
Open forum. Okay, so open forum. Members of the public may address the commission on human relation issues.
Any comments from the public?
There's two of you guys.
They love our meeting so much. They never miss a meeting. So, we're
always
glad
happy to.
Pardon me?
Always happy to.
Glad to have you here. Excellent. Perfect.
Okay, item number four, consider conducting strategic planning session 2 at December commission meeting.
Excellent. So we had earlier this month a 4-hour strategic planning meeting, which I guess I'll talk about at number 6, that was really powerful and interesting. And we've been in a lot of flux for a whole number and variety of reasons. And really good opportunity to sort of wipe the slate clean and look at things anew. And this organizational psychologist, Dr. John Becknell, did an amazing job of sort of bobbing and weaving and tracking us where we were going, and really tried to think about who we want to be, what we want to be, how we want to function, given all the players and community people involved. And so that was the first part of the meeting. Prior to that, he had had phone interviews with every, or in-person interviews with every commissioner, and shortly thereafter with a couple as well. And there was also an online survey. And really, he did his homework and I thought came very well prepared. So, we want to do a second one because we really scratched the surface and maybe went an inch deep, then we have a lot more to drill, I think, to get to some strategic plans for the short term and for the long term. And so we are proposing to do this at our next commission meeting, but 2 hours won't cut it. We really need a good 3 or 4 hours. And so what I'd like to propose is that we do this session from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. on the second Thursday of the month, which then leads us to some unanswered questions about the location of where our meetings will be and the times of where our meetings will be, because the new bylaws mandate that the clerk of the board must be present, because any time we have meetings, according to the Brown Act, which I think all of you are familiar with, it needs to be open to the public as well. So I don't know, Robin, if you wanted to comment on where we are with that. We have sort of all the questions, I know, but
no. As far as the bylaws, the bylaws do state that the meetings are to be held. The board approved meetings are to be held during regular business hours and in the commission room at the Hall of Admin. It does stay. It does stay in there, actually. It does say it should be held location within Orange County, but it does specifically say if the room is available at the time the meeting is scheduled, it is to be conducted in the commission hearing room. As far as I'm concerned, this is what the board approved. This is what, as the clerk, that I would go by. I do understand that there may be time for the commission to transition to it. So I have no problem if you want to do the next meeting at the time that you're suggesting. I don't really have the authority to override this, but I just want to know from the clerk's perspective, I don't have a problem as far as being present. We can be, the clerk will be present for the meeting if you do schedule that time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ari, may I ask you to weigh in? I don't know if you got my email from earlier. Let me just put context so that everybody knows.
Yeah.
We had a meeting prior to the bylaws change in which Carrie, myself, Michael Reynolds, another commissioner, and Kiarina, our vice chair, who isn't here tonight, met with Supervisor Steele and Doe and their chiefs of staff. Ari is the chief of staff for Supervisor Steele. And so in that conversation, they seemed to be rather amenable to meeting here rather at the Hall of Administration and to do it after hours. So that's
so,
the context.
Yeah, so first, yes, the supervisors have been able to some sort of flexibility. They wanted to keep that language in there, and hopefully there could be something that could be arranged, even if it was after hours. I know there was a lot of concern about just meeting in downtown Santa Ana in the first place. So they were both amenable to being flexible about it. We haven't had a meeting of the two of them together since then to discuss the issue, but I've talked about it with Dylan Wright from Community Resources and reiterated that we had expressed that flexibility. I think at this time it's something that I guess the commission needs to talk about what type of availability they can do going forward, if it's something that will work. If not, it's something that we would either you could work with the contract administrator, Community Resources, to see what can be done within the existing bylaws. If we need to change them, I guess that would come after that point.
So we should weigh in and then report back to the Board of Supervisors on that particular issue.
I think that would probably be helpful. I think the board, the ad hoc, took your concerns and agreed that it was important to be flexible, but the board passed the bylaws at the written, which say if available, so there's a point for discussion, right? If the commissioners aren't going to be available, I think the ad hoc would be interested in fixing that, as they said.
Got it. Thank you very much for that input. Carrie, would you like to have a comment?
Well, it's...
On both the 5 to 9 at the next meeting and then the more general issue of time and place.
Right. Well, I think since all of us are accustomed to the evening meetings, this next one at least should be the 5 to 9, as you suggested, if you can be available. Okay.
Yes.
And I know that puts
yes.
you out a little bit, but okay, thank you so much. I think it's still an open discussion about when and where for the continuation, from then on.
What are your thoughts about it?
Well, I would prefer not to meet for downtown for the reasons I've already iterated them. It's especially at night, it's a little dangerous to be walking around on the streets. I've had a couple of experiences down there at night with some homeless people who came up, and I wasn't sure what their intention was. I was a little bit afraid.
Mm-hmm.
One asked for money, and but you never know when people are wandering around. And because there's a walk from the parking structure across the street, that's particularly unsafe. If there were underground parking, that would make it different if you went up in elevators. It's the fact that you have to walk on the streets at night. And I suppose that could be overcome, but if you had somebody walk with you all the time. But the other part that's difficult is that it's not really an easy access off the freeway. That's a little difficult, more difficult to get down there, get parked, takes more time. I think it's a convenience thing and a safety thing, to me. It's a convenience and a safety thing. The bad side of that we also brought up at our meeting with the supervisors, was that the negative is that it doesn't allow the public to come see us often downtown. That's they're probably not going to be as ready to visit us if they have to go through the parking, paid parking, all that, in terms of coming here. The comparison, coming here and getting free parking, I think, is probably
And despite our small numbers in the public tonight, there are often times when we have issues of concern where we could get, you know, a number of people. So thank you.
Right.
Chief.
Is a couple questions now. Is my understanding that we have to maybe not meet here anymore? Is that one of the issues?
Yeah.
Well, according to the bylaws that were passed, the hall administration is the preferred place.
Mm-hmm.
Although in the ad hoc committee, Supervisor Doe said, you know, we have a lot of public places in the whole county that might be options for meetings.
So I'd like to offer then, you know, again, concerning the safety concerns, and we can meet in the city of Irvine if the board of supervisor ad hoc committee is open to, you know, being flexible. And this group is interested in somewhere other than here that is centrally located. I consider Irvine centrally located. It might be more convenient for us. There's plenty of parking at 7 o'clock at night. There's plenty of meeting space. It's safe. It's Irvine.
Hello, Garden Grove. No, I'm just kidding. Gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that I would offer that as a point of discussion of where we can have our future meetings.
And where are you located?
We are located at Harvard and Alton.
That's
so
right.
The exit would be if you're going southbound the 405, exit Jamboree, maybe a mile, the station's a mile from there, City Hall.
Right.
And going northbound 405,
that
go out the corridor.
That does seem pretty central.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could, and then there is a plenty of options. There's a conference and training center there. We even have a conference room inside the PD that's about this size. So there's options there.
Excellent. Thank you, Chief, for that offer.
Mr. Mayor, out there too. I think Irvine's a great idea because it is a little bit more central. We're a little bit further south. But if you needed another option, I think we also have a couple in Lubbock Hills: the City Hall right off El Toro Road, or the Lubbock Hills Community Center, which we host lots of countywide events at the community center. And either one of those would also, right off of Felicia, either of those would probably be available as well.
Or it could be a backup if, say, for instance, the primary location wasn't available one day and go somewhere else.
Well, so, you know, just thinking aloud, I mean, one of the things I want to do is why I began the meeting with the mission statement is to bring in a speaker every month for us to learn from and grow from, and perhaps maybe having not a wandering meeting every month, but one in which you go to different places and learn about those communities. I mean, Garden Grove is qualitatively differently than Laguna Hills, and to understand those differences and to hear about them and understand them would be particularly the issues with which you struggle and the issues that which we're proud would be really good for this commission. So, I mean, that's another idea. Other thoughts? Becky, did you? Kim, did you want to weigh in? So I guess we should make a motion simply on this issue of December. I'll write an email reflective of this conversation. Ari, is that the right approach? Or
yeah.
Can you just report back?
You heard it.
So I've got it.
Excellent. I definitely got to follow up.
Okay. Good. So would somebody like to move that we'll meet from 5 to 9 the second Thursday of the month, December 14th. Here at this building from 5 to 9.
So moved.
Dr. Niles moves.
Second.
Seconded by the chief. Any conversation? Seeing none, let's take a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? Excellent. So, passes unanimously. I want to move item 5 to later on, if we can do that, because our guest speaker isn't here. He's coming from LAX, so just want to give him. He said he'll be here by 8, so we can go through the other issues first, if that's okay.
Yep.
Do I have that power?
Yes.
I don't know. I'm just asking.
Yes, you do.
I'm just asking.
Yes, you do.
So, go ahead.
Okay, I'm number 6. Update on Commission Strategic Planning Session 1.
So, if everybody will turn to page 4, as I began to say, this session was really inspiring and moving, and I think it will be excellent for our new commissioners to read really thoroughly this information and try and digest it, and for Carrie and Michael, who weren't able to attend, and Michael's not here tonight either, to really read through it, because he combined, or maybe you did know, I don't know, both the conversation and the interviews, so it's all sort of integrated into one. And on page 4 is sort of the outline of what we were doing. And if you will go to page 5. And bullet point number 2 and the sub-bullet points, I think, are really important for us to read through. So, group discussed the foundational importance of the commission to the quality of life in Orange County, and discussion included the following. First, the commission and commissioners are symbolic and powerful and important symbols of government's concern and care about hate, tension, conflict, discrimination, intolerance, and I would add in our conversations also to celebrate the good happening in our county as well.
Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. These are important things for us to do, and Chief really, I thought, emphasized well the symbolic value of having such a commission, let alone its practical value, which I think resonated with everyone. Commissioners and commission staff act as representatives of the people, for the people and of the people's government, and there's an important cachet for commissioners in being part of the government. Commission is the central address in Orange County for reporting and the prevention of hate crime. All advocacy groups turn to the commission for its leadership. Again, for our new members, we are in a coalition with, I don't know, dozens of other groups, the Anti-Defamation League, Japanese American Association, the Korean Americans Association, and the list goes on and on, CARE from the Islamic community, and whether it's normal on the phone with them reporting their issues to us being a resource for them, really it is the go-to place when something goes down in Orange County. Police community relations, no one is doing this kind of non-threatening, very effective work in the OC. The commission has the support of almost all police departments in Orange County and of the public. Instead of court, internal affairs departments, of PDs, and other legal remedies, the commission is solving problems person to person, officer to citizen. And lastly, the commission is the go-to body when conflict arises in Orange County. People view the commission as safe, moderating, fair body to find reconciliation on different issues. Comments from those who were there, want to weigh in? What was your feeling? What was your thought? What was your experience? Staff, you're welcome to comment as well. Was that moving, huh? Or am I just such a good summarizer that...
Yeah,
Becca and then Carrie.
I think we discussed about this topic and we all agree on the ideas and some of the points that you mentioned here is important to the commission and our activities. So I think it is the most important part of our strategy plan, and I think we need to keep it that way.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's why the second meeting is going to be so important. The question is, how are we going to operationalize these things that we're doing to improve upon what's been done so well by our staff and other directors, other things we want to think about. When we met with the ad hoc committee of Supervisors Doe and Steele, they're interested in our work and want us to be in conversation with them, a couple times a year, and also to get their feedback and their vision and thoughts about the role of Orange County, and not just those supervisors, I mean all 5 supervisors as well. Any other comments? Carrie, you wanted to say?
Well, I wasn't there, but may I add a comment?
Please.
Anyway? Well, I was very glad that you added after the first line about celebrating the productivity of the commission and all the good works. I think I'm being redundant. You've heard this before, but for you new folks, I've been making a point of wanting more celebration in the commission. It's kind of a marketing thing too for the county. If we create a sense of productivity and success, that's really a very positive thing, and it has the outside looking at the commission through different eyes too. When the commission is perceived as dealing with only negative subjects and hate crimes and so forth, there's a certain perception developed. And if we can incorporate, like the Goodwill committee that I suggested we develop, and we on a regular basis go around and we acknowledge and reward people for things that they've worked out in their businesses or their schools, academic situation, or in the police department, or at the hospitals, wherever it is, when we can take a role model of effective human relations and spotlight that, focus on that, that gives us another very positive way to deal with the public too. And the public viewing our commission as something other than a group of people who works on all the problems.
Thank you. Anybody else? That point, Carrie, was made over and over again in the strategic planning.
Oh, very good. Well, I assumed it was because you brought it up.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think the one thing I'd like to share,
yes.
I'm sorry, it's if you look at your packets, page 11, these are the results to the survey that Dr. Becknell did for all the commissioners. And I think within the matrix on page 11, the two things that stood out to me were that the majority of everybody felt that the commission provides a needed and essential service to this county, and that today the activities and actions of the commission are improving Orange County. So when it comes to the purpose and what we're doing, we're all on the same page that we're valuable to our residents, to our citizens, and for me, these two stood out. And it really made me feel like, okay, we're all on the same page around the work that we do and that it's important. So it was really nice for me to see this as a staff member and making sure that I'm able to applaud my colleagues for the work they're doing in and out every day.
Chief?
I was just gonna make a general comment that, you know, I thought it was a very good discussion, and I mean, everyone participated, and for me it was just good to sort of, I guess, review in a way the importance of what we do and in our role, and you know, it's kind of like, you know, we come to these meetings and it's you go through the agenda and you say yay or nay, and but how often you really sit back and reflect on why you're sitting in this chair and why you're doing what you're doing and the influence that you're actually having, the opportunities as a commissioner. So just it made me reflect on that, you know, my own personal role, but also just in general the overarching role of this commission.
Excellent. Thank you, Chief. Now that Joyce is here, I'd like you to both introduce yourselves. So there are staff members, and just tell us what areas of responsibility each of you have. Joyce?
Yes. Hello. Good night, everybody. My name is Joyce Sanchez, and the responsibility I carry as a commissioner staff is I do police community dialogues, and I also do the training for the Sheriff's Academy.
I'm Don Hahn. Police community reconciliation program is one of my core work for the commission, and I also respond to hate crime and hate incidences in the county, and also do hate crime prevention work, and also produce the hate crime report annually.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you both. Welcome. Let's do 7, 8, 9, and then we'll introduce Dr. Dorsey.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mack. Right before we move up, I just noticed something on as I look to from outside, I look at
sure.
As a first time new point on this. It looks clear that we have some work to do as a commission as well on this. And it looks like, you know, you pointed out that everyone understands and agrees that it's an essential service, needed and essential, but looks like we couldn't agree that we agree on the purpose. And though it looks like everyone believes that they individually know the purpose, they don't believe that as a group we agree on the purpose. So I would just hope that maybe at the next meeting that we have, maybe that would be one of our, with the moderator, whoever conducts that might help us along so that we can get on the same page.
That, I mean, that's a quote from the first meeting, getting on the same page. I mean, it's really, really important, because there is no reason we shouldn't have disagreement on this commission in terms of the issues that we face. That's what makes it thoughtful, interesting. But in the end, the goals ought to be the same, no matter how we get there. And so that's what we're really trying to achieve.
I mean, we're about diversity of opinion, right? But
100%.
Exactly. You have to be united in that goal.
100%. Yeah, that's why we're doing it.
Yeah.
And,
okay, great.
And it was, you know, I mean, to be perfectly honest, a long time coming. We're on a good trajectory here.
Perfect. Yeah, sounds like
yeah.
A great plan.
Thank you very much. Madam Clerk.
Item number 7 is the Executive Director's Report.
All right, so last month we announced that the Cairo conference was going to happen.
What
and
is Cairo?
Cairo, California Association of Human Relations Organizations.
Yes,
I got it. Okay, so this morning your commission staff were in LA. We took the train in to attend this summit, and it was a grand variety of human relations commissions from across Southern California that gathered to talk about the different projects and the different focuses around human relations issues and the type of work that they're doing. So it was very great. It was great to be able to interact with other human relations commissions. And one of the takeaways, at least for me, was there was a presentation around Cal State universities doing service learning projects and how they look to commissions to be able to place students to do work for the commission, because they understand that the commissions usually have very little resources. So some of the examples they shared is they've had students do research for the commissions, that they've been able to do special projects related to youth, depending on the type of project that they're really are looking to place students with commissions. So there was a representative from the Cal State University of Fullerton there that took this information, that if it's something that the commission's interested in, we have that connection or that contact there. So it was a really great convening. My second update is, if you're not all aware, we've moved from this building. We're no longer downstairs. We have windows. We're no longer in a bomb shelter.
Yeah.
Basement. We're not too far from here. We're at 1801 East Edinger. And we're in the Big Brothers Big Sisters building. And the commission staff have their separate entrance, so we're suite 125. If you get a chance to come and visit us, come over. We'd love to give you a little tour of their space and where we conduct business. So it's really nice to have windows.
I bet.
There's a couple invitations. Last couple months, I've been announcing the Walk in My Shoes event, and I even blasted out an email. It's coming up real quick. It's next Friday. And for those who might want to attend, actually, before I left the office, someone handed me parking tickets. So that way you don't have to pay for parking, but you can come. It starts at 8:30 a.m. And it's going to be at Cal State Fullerton this year. So I can send out another email to remind you, but if you are going to be there, I have a parking ticket for you for that day. So please don't leave without it. Yes.
I have a question about, so it showed that it goes from 8:30 until 5 o'clock at night, and that's what it showed on the flyer that went out, I think.
Really? No,
two o'clock.
1:30 is the wrap up. Because the student will in the morning, they'll register, and they'll have the opening ceremony and plenary, a keynote speaker. Then they'll break up to go to three different workshops. After the third workshop, they come in and they get lunch. And they have lunch and then have another keynote entertainment, and then the school has to get on the bus to get back to school. So it ends like around 1:15, 1:30.
Okay.
So you don't have to be there for the entire time. It's great to see the plenary session when all the students are in the space and they're energetic, they're ready to go. That's the really early morning. That's 8, probably like 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock is when the plenary sessions usually start.
So you could come in, say hello, just see all the kids there. There's 500 students that are coming from across.
What day again is it?
It's next Friday.
16th.
17th, yes. So I can forward again the email and the flyer with the details. But like I said, if you plan to be there, do not leave without your parking pass. I do have a stack of them here with me. And then the other last announcement I have, and there's a flyer on page 17. And the reason why I share this is because one of our dear commissioners is part of the panel for a UCI event. And the title is The Fierce Urgency of Now, Climate and Context for Social Unrest and Community Healing. It's November 16th from 5 to 7. There's details on how to register. But once I saw that picture, I said, ooh, I know that, man. We should announce it and we should go and support. So I wanted to bring that to commissioner's attention.
Well, and also there's a lot of familiar faces on this panel.
Yes.
Of course, Allison Edwards is going to be on one of the panels. There's two panels. And then, of course, Reverend Pastor Mark Whitloff from CORE is going to be on the panel as well. And Rabbi Peter Levy from ADL. Dr. Parham from UCI, he's going to, I think, moderate it. So it's quite the lineup, actually. Matt Murphy, the DA, coincidentally, I worked a homicide case with him 20 years ago. So, it's going to be a great panel.
So, that's, future commission meetings has already been discussed. The only other update I have is I received this evening an update that our commission webpage is live under the OC Community Resources website on the county. So tonight I'll get on my computer and I'll email you all the links so you can look at our newly shiny website.
Thank you, Norma, for all your hard work. Next slide.
Item 8 is update from OC Chiefs and Sheriff.
I was only going to mention this, so I don't have anything else to mention tonight. Thank you.
I stole your spotlight. Sorry.
No, I'm glad to see this on everyone's radar.
Okay. Item number 9 is OCSD Interfaith Council update.
So OCSD is the Sheriff's Department of Orange County. Just for some context, OC Human Relations Commission, in conjunction with Sheriff Hutchins, began about 2 years ago now an interfaith advisory board. And it's really turned out to be this amazing thing in which OC Human Relations Commission and the Sheriff gather. It's now probably 60 or 70 pastors, reverends, rabbis from around the county, and other interested players in faith life to come learn with each other and talk to each other. And so oftentimes we'll go to a church somewhere in Orange County. Whatever city we're in, we also invite the police chief of that city to come make a presentation. The church leader will also make a presentation about their faith. And then the sheriff always makes a presentation. And then we also are meeting at sheriff's places. We were at the jail last time, and prior to that at the Tactical Training Center in Anaheim, and really getting a chance to dialogue in very real ways and to talk about tough issues. We had an opportunity to meet with an undocumented young man who told his story. And to have the sheriff there and the police chief of Anaheim and this young man tell his story with 60 or 70 pastors, rabbis, and clergy there, we were all in tears, we were all passionate, there were tough questions, there were warm questions, and it was really a very interesting insight for all of us, and it's something that the commission, without the commission, wouldn't have happened, and so we're appreciative for that. And I think our next meeting is in a couple weeks in terms of the executive board. Norm and I sit on the executive council of that.
So, ask you a question?
Yes, please.
So I've been pretty involved in the interfaith councils in our area, and I just wondered, so is this one affiliated with some of the other Orange County interfaith councils? Did they pull? Are some of these members also involved in interfaith council and the standard interfaith council?
Of course, yeah. I mean, you know, once you're addicted to interfaith work,
yeah,
you go to everything.
Okay, so
it's a lot of the same players.
Okay.
But we've also really tried hard to draw out people who aren't the usual suspects,
right.
Particularly small congregations where, I mean, it's easy to get sort of the big guys to show up, but the small congregations of 100 families, of 70 families, you know, particularly in Santa Ana and some of the other places, we really want their voices heard.
And the focus is more on the, of this interfaith council is on the, our purpose as a commission and on with the sheriff's, involvement with the sheriffs along with the churches and
yes. It's widened. It was really to be an advisory council
to the sheriff.
Yeah, but it's grown in that it's discussion, it's dialogue about the real issues we face today.
With our purpose.
Well, not exclusively, but yes, with our purpose.
Can I get a list of who's in it? Who's
sure.
Involved in it?
With pleasure.
I appreciate that.
With pleasure.
Thanks.
You can do that. So let's go back to item number 5.
Okay. Number 5 is a presentation by Dr. Charles Dorsey, Perspective on Being an African American Man in American Society.
So, friends, before I introduce Reverend Dorsey, one of my goals as the chair is to not just be a meeting in which we report to one another what's gone on, but it's also to learn and grow and to understand and ask questions so that our county will be the strongest it can be. And in that spirit, I hope we to do this at every meeting. So if you have somebody who's interesting, somebody who can bring us knowledge and perspective that we don't have, please either put it on the agenda yourself, which the bylaws allow for, but I'd appreciate it if you'd let me know so that I can do the timing right and make sure it is it's going to be an effective use of our time in dialogue with you. And I think, you know, inviting Reverend Dorsey to begin sort of this speaker series is the exact right person. So if you don't mind coming on up, Charles, we can just bring a chair up. Reverend Dorsey is all right, come right up here. Are you still at CORE? I know that there's a change. He is one of the reverends at Christ Our Redeemer AME Church in Irvine, California. He recently got his doctorate and is really not a rising star. He is a star in Orange County. In terms of clergy, in terms of education, in terms of motivation. Last year I asked him to speak to my teenagers, about 100 teenagers, most of whom were white, fairly privileged Jewish young people, and to get a perspective on something they don't know or have experienced. And I thought to myself, well, that's exactly what I would like Reverend Dorsey to do here. And more than being a great reverend and a great philosopher, and also a brand new author, tell us about your book in a minute. He's also a very dear friend. So, Charles, welcome. We're really glad that you're here.
Thank you for having me, Rabbi.
Pleasure.
Hello to you all. I imagine you've been sitting at this table for a while. I know I've got friends around the table. And so I appreciate that. And I appreciate the introduction. Rabbi mentioned a book I just wrote. It's called Fathers and Sons Speak. It deals with the relationship and a strange relationship that I had with my own father for 28 years, and then we come back together. It impacts my life in a tremendously significant way. It causes me to evolve in purpose and evolve in understanding about at least what I feel I'm called in this world to do. And now I'm on a mission to collect stories that are similar. Why did I accept this invitation? Number one, because the rabbi asked. Well, and sincerely, not necessarily because he's a rabbi, but because we have a relationship. I tend to avoid trying to capture the narrative of an entire people. And so as I shared with his students, I hope to communicate a very minor slice of what it may look like as an African-American male who's growing. we have different interpretations about what's acceptable and what's not. I felt disrespected partially because I have earned education. I have tried to live in good health, which is sometimes a stereotype that comes along with black men. And I still can't escape this association with athleticism or music. And I think this is a challenge for a lot of black men, where you kind of, people don't have to talk to you to know who you are. They just draw a conclusion. Clearly, you must have played sports, right? Clearly, you must smoke some kind of weed because of your hair, right? Clearly, you must be from another country and speak in a strange accent. And I think that that's difficult to live under, where you don't get to self-identify. You're subject to whatever the encounters. The second thing happened. Everybody know who Steve Wonder is? Steve Wonder is? Oh, man, this is a white guy. I happen to be an elder in a church. He says, "Hey, man, you know, you look good. You remind me of somebody." See, I said, "Yeah, man, who? Who do I remind you of?" He says, "Stevie Wonder." Now, you gotta understand what I'm saying. And I got one more story, and I'll kind of shorten my commentary. I looked at him, and I happened to be in a conversation with another black dude. And we looking at each other with this awkward smile, like, "Stevie Wonder? Really? Is that the best that you could do?" And I said to myself, "Why can't I look like me?" What did I do to solicit a compliment? Is not who I am compliment enough? Now, this is a challenge. And so then, last but not least, I was down in South Carolina, in Charleston, in a town that you can literally feel the division. Right? This is a place where Dylan Roof goes to the church and shoots these congregation members. And thank God for the Irvine police. Share most of that story, but it's a great story around how relationships caused us to feel very safe in that moment. We'll retell that. So I go in there, and there's this great big room full of people. It's the gala, and they introduce me as this scholar. And the guy who funded it all after the event comes up to me and grabs my shoulder and says, "What position did you play?" And I said, "You actually have heard my biography, and none of it mentions sports. Not what I study." I'm in full-blown suit, because, you know, when they recognize you, got to look good. I'm in another state. My curriculum vitae has been read before the people, and the best thing you can say to me is, "What sport did you play?" And so the young white man behind him turned red. I shake his hand and I walk away. Right? Each of these incidences could have been moments of altercation and serious discussion, because for some reason I just can't get away from this whole little misunderstanding about my body, what my skin says, what my hair says, neither of which have a voice. And I think that that's important. I was listening to this group that the greatest tool that you have is a question. Right? The usage of a question. Right? Inquire. I think it saves us all from having stories like these where now I have to ask myself, what does that conclusion mean? And so I have other people say, "Well, they were all just trying to be nice to you." I said, "This can't be what nice looks like. It's not possible that I would travel through this nation and everybody saying the same thing." And my friends joke, and they say crazy stuff like, "Well, you shouldn't be as fit as you are." I said, "Okay. Clearly you drank this it's like a soda bottle being shooken up. So that when somebody tries to have a regular encounter with you, you might just get the release from whatever microaggressive ceiling or compartment they've been in. And so as a consequence, they're more misunderstood. Of course, this culminates with an encounter that I had with the sheriffs here. Right, I just purchased a brand new car, and I think everybody knows that when you purchase a new car, you don't get your license plates right away. So I was driving in my brand new car on the Sunday before Easter. Chief knows the story well. Rabbi may know the story well. I shared the same story. And I remember, I think maybe not being in this building, but there's a training center where the law enforcement is trained, and they invite community members to come over, volunteer 3.5 hours of the time, to come and deal with some of the, how do you deal with people in your particular community? What are we supposed to do? So we have this conversation. So I participated in James Amarandis. Is he doing okay? I hope he's doing okay. Is he
doing good?
Okay.
Yes.
Praise the Lord. He would invite us over. And so I get pulled over, and the officer, so I pulled my new car over, and he draws his weapon. Draws his weapon and comes to my vehicle, weapon drawn. I thank God I have automatic windows. Hit the automatic, put my hands out of the door immediately, because I did not want to end up on the news. And because I was afraid, he comes up to the window. I can't remember what he said. He said something like license and registration. I have tight jeans on because they're in style. I reach for my wallet. I drop it. My car door is still closed. My head is down because I don't want to look him in the eye. I look down at my wallet. I look up. I look down at my wallet. I say, I'm sure you don't want me to get that. He says, yes, you're right. He asked me to step out of the vehicle. I step out of the vehicle when he starts searching my pockets and asking me the key question, do you have anything illegal on you? I tell him, you don't have to do this. I know your boss. We talk all the time. You do not have to do this. I understand the protocol. First question he asked me was, is this your car? I said, yes, I just bought it. That's right. That's exactly right. He commits to searching me now. But I'm married to an attorney. I know my rights. So to the extent that there's something that's not, that I can say to say, what cause do you have? But we can't do that when a gun is drawn, because if a gun is drawn and you resist, there's a possibility that there is grounds for using what you felt might have been a threat to your life, which you may have heard in news in past times. And of course, this was at the time in 2015 where there were black bodies dropping everywhere, right? So he detains me, takes my hands, puts them behind my back, squeezes my hands together really tightly. He doesn't, well, either that or he'd have to put handcuffs on you. We know we don't want to do that, because then I'll have a real gripe. Checks my pockets. His partner, because they came to his partner, then says, I told him, I said, I just bought the car. And you know I just bought the car because it has this little slip on the front that shows it's a brand new car. He then says something to the extent, over the radio, they say, hey, this is a brand new car, but the names on it are Charles and my wife's name, Dorsey. I said, okay, cool. He said, is that your name? I said, yes. And then he releases. He says, we wanted to make sure that nobody that we, he said, your car looked like a stolen car. Those are his words. Your car looked like a stolen car. We wanted to make sure that somebody got their car back. And he never checked my license, so he doesn't know to this day if I am who I say I am. Right? I called the chief immediately and I said, this can't be right. I can't spend 12 hours at a job helping to mend relationships between communities of color and then still get treated this way. several stories told later and nothing happens. I feel like that could have been the end of my life. So how do we restore that person who has then dropped all of his dignity and had to decide whether he wants to go home or not for driving a new car, which is supposed to be in Laguna Hills where everybody drives new cars. Nobody has a license plate. Could it be possible that I was driving something that I owned? They said they couldn't see me. That was their excuse as well, that my windows were too tinted. And I can guarantee that some of us are driving cars with tinted windows today, right now, that you can't see in, and you've never had that experience. So in my mind, this creates a challenge. And I think there are many people who would like me to have the same story. And so now organizations like ours are forced to limit relationships. And we don't understand why people are so upset or why they're so aggressive or why they might have a bias towards people in leadership, but these are some of the reasons why. I don't think everybody lives that way. I just think that I have some of those experiences, and that's just part of my story. So, facilitating questions if possible.
Are there questions for Reverend Dorsey? I have one.
Yes, sir.
How do you remain hopeful?
This organization was kind enough to recognize me as a community leader, and I remain hopeful because of people like you, Rabbi, and people like the chief. When I called, you answered. Frankly, I had somebody who I could bounce my thoughts off of. I also remain hopeful because I see other young men, and I'm allowed to tell them, I've been through that too, so if I can survive it, you can survive it. It's not the way it should be. This is not the standard. That's no excuse for you to risk your life over some misunderstanding. So long as I see people looking up to me saying, Charles, you, I want to be like you, they give me hope. I have to live long enough to show them how to live in the midst of this, even if it doesn't change. And so, and I honestly am not sure that it has to change for the life that I live to be viewed in a more positive light. I think my life is the evidence that a life without challenge is not a prerequisite for success or survival, right? That it then is the evidence that regardless of what you face, you still have a responsibility to excel. Chin down when you have to. Swallow your pride when you have to. But go and change this world. That's what you've got to do. That's why I'm here. The rest of it we'll deal with when we are supposed to. And hopefully a leader rises up that will be able to say, I saw a change. So maybe I'm a part of that, but maybe somebody else is as well.
Chief, I just make a comment. I just wanted to publicly say that Charles has been a really, really great friend. Christ Redeemer has been a great partner for many, many years now. And I think maybe since we have some new commissioners, but Charles was the driving force behind the Unity March we had last year that went from the Wellesley List Town Center to the church, and was well attended by faith-based leaders from across the region, government officials, council members. It was remarkable what you were able to put together, and had a lot of meaning. And I've been to Christ Redeemer many, many times in the past, and hopefully many more times in the future, and had the privilege of seeing Charles speak at the Cloud Church at CloudCon just a couple weeks ago, Jason Aguilar's church. So, good seeing you.
Thank you, Chief. And I'm going to publicly acknowledge the fact that both as a commissioner, but both as a leader, the Chief does not shy away from these conversations. And we can be honest and upfront about things. And that gives me hope, too.
Absolutely.
Because
Mayor, and then Dr. Reynolds.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing with us tonight and for spending part of your evening. I thought it was, even though for you, I'm sure you've talked about this a thousand times, but I still felt it was fascinating just to see how you know, the different perspective depending on your prism or what, you know, where you're coming from. You know, you talked about how, you know, it was really difficult for you to receive those types of compliments, but then even your own family were kind of like, hey, they're just trying to be nice to you. And so, I mean, it's really important that, you know, that people do understand those nuances, those little things. And I think it's really easy to teach, oh, you can't do these very overt things that 99% of us would never even think about doing. But what about these types of things that maybe most of us might do on accident, you know? And those are the types of educational pieces that I think we can really benefit by. So I appreciate that. One thing that kind of bothers me is that, you know, Charles, you've got some great connections, and you know the chief. Mm-hmm. You can call him on your phone, you know. you know that. But most people don't, right?
Right.
And so my first reaction was thinking about, you know, the guy that doesn't have the chief's phone number, and you got some resolution because you were able to make that call. Do you think one of the things that I've learned, I'm brand new to this, newer than you. And so, but one of the things that this commission does is they facilitate these opportunities for people when they have a grievance like that with law enforcement, mm-hmm. where they can actually have a safe place where they can communicate and describe with maybe even the officer to talk about it a little bit and to maybe ask some questions and get some feedback. I don't think you had that opportunity, but would that be something, do you think that would be something that you would have wanted to do, to be able to talk, you know, in a safe environment with that officer and kind of discuss so that you can understand your side of the story?
Yeah, this is great. Not this question. Let me dive back and say, I think a key component for what you said was, I think if we learn to appreciate the complexity of it, honor that it's complex, and that it will always be complex. Like, you know, if we create a model that's sensitive to complexity, we win. Because it is complex for people who are not black and not male to engage, as well as complex to exist in that particular space. And so each party is sensitive enough to appreciate that, then I think we learn how to appreciate it, and then models evolve out of that. I actually asked them for motives that are really not what they should be. But I wanted to meet with the officer because I wanted him to look me in the eye and tell me that he didn't see me. Right? Beginning of the story goes, they passed by my car, and like most African American men, when you see the cop, this is such a generalization, my upbringing was, when you see a cop because you're not sure if you're obeying the law, you don't want to do anything that causes you to get pulled over, you let off your gas because you need to check your speed limit, you need to check if you got on your seatbelt. So they were two lanes over, they passed by me first, and then they slowed up. This is when I knew I was going to get pulled over. Now, most people can't tell that they're getting ready to get pulled over after a cop has passed them. Unfortunately, I know. It's like, oh, shucks.
It's coming.
I'm about to get pulled over. And then I asked myself, I said, what am I doing wrong? I said, wait, no, I'm in a new car, baby. I'm good. They want to see my nice car. So I wanted to look him in the eye and say, you didn't see.
Why not?
And I wanted to be out, because I was not in clergy uniform. I never told him I was a clergy. I could have pulled that card, by the way. I could have said, my name is Charles Dorsey, Reverend Dr. Charles Dorsey, Sandra Hutchins is your boss. Look at my phone, call her, ask who I am. Tell her, she'll tell you I wouldn't be driving no stolen car. She'll just tell you. But I wanted to see how they would treat me just as a normal person. I should not have to pull rank in a common traffic stop where I was not breaking any laws.
And this is in Laguna Hills?
This is in Laguna Hills, with the new cars.
I'm the mayor of Laguna Hills.
Oh.
Before you were mayor, man. Before you were mayor.
There's a bill of rights that says you cannot confront the officer. They protest them. So that's what they told me. If they're not telling the truth, then that's a problem, and we'll revisit it this year. but I understand that there's something that, and I understand why.
Yeah.
I really do, because sometimes the officer's safety is paramount. I can tell you, the officer's number of jobs go home. So by releasing their identity, it does not secure that safety. So they send representatives out to talk with you. I do think that would have been helpful, but I don't think it would be helpful for everybody, because some people just want to do evil. They just want it. They want to come for the person who they feel is treated them. I think this group
can break that barrier of that not being able to.
Mm-hmm.
They can facilitate where you can.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, but I'm not. I don't think that would help with everybody there. To be very honest with you, I'm not sure that that's the solution. I think the solution is there's deep rooted childhood, teenhood, young adulthood, and adulthood pain that I got to deal with every time I see it. There was a cop, we were playing baseball the day before, not in uniform, showed up in uniform, I did not recognize him, literally. He was like, hi, remember me? I said, oh, tricked me out, right? So I have my own, and I'm not ashamed to admit, I got my own issues to deal with. And so I've got to adjust as well. You see what I'm saying? And I also believe that the officer who may have pulled his gun, who had the hair rise up on the back of his neck, he's got pain too. He's been mistreated. I don't know. I have awareness that sometimes cops have other lives. So they were military police, or they practiced. They served in the armed services. So they come. You don't need those experiences, right? So who knows? Who knows their story? I don't. Now, it may be helpful for them to anonymously share their story, right? And for me to anonymously share my story, and for us to deal with the stories, to ask ourselves if the lived experience has impacted the encounter, but never outside of anonymity, right? Because I don't want to be prostituted, and that person doesn't want to be used as an example for the errors of their peers. But their stories are extremely relevant. So how do we get access to what makes the person who they are? And I think it's their stories. I walked up on a car before, and it had windows that looked just like yours, and happened to be a person that looked like you, and so I came for you because I didn't want what happened last time to happen now. And I put my hands out that window because I didn't want to be that next guy. Do you see what I'm saying? So
absolutely. Dr. Carey, you had a question.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to come at it, ask a question, and
sure.
from a psychotherapist standpoint.
Sure, sure.
And you've probably been asked this before.
Mm-hmm.
You might have an answer on it.
Okay.
I'll pursue this by saying that I've had the privilege of spending time with Condoleezza Rice.
Mm-hmm.
And part of our discussion was, because she told me the horrors of growing up in the South,
mm-hmm.
when she was a young girl. Fortunately, she was born into a wonderful family,
mm-hmm.
That prized education.
Mm-hmm.
She learned how to play the piano when
mm-hmm.
she was very young. So in one sense, she had a privileged upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have to live her life out in a horrible ghetto.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but she said that the bias and the prejudice was
mm-hmm.
so profound.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her, I said, how... You know, I deal with people who carry a lot of bitterness and hatred around because they've been treated badly.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you overcome that to become this accomplished, wonderful, beautiful person that you are?
Mm-hmm.
Because the rage and the bitterness can keep you from developing into that person that you could be.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew exactly what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, it wasn't an easy process. She said, I still deal with it. And if you've seen her in her behavior, you know that she's a very elegant lady.
Yeah.
She articulates very well. She's very intelligent. So you don't see that rage coming through. She says, I still have bitterness. I still have to deal with it from time to time. She said, but my conduit to my own sanity and getting rid of this bitterness was believing in God. And accepting the power of God to help me through.
Yeah, yeah.
To help me through that. She said, I really do feel cleansed of that bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that's what has allowed me to achieve what I have achieved.
Mm-hmm.
Because that bitterness would hold her back.
Mm-hmm.
And as a psychotherapist, I know that, but I kind of wanted to hear it from her lips.
Yeah.
So my question is, how do you teach young people that you work with and in your clergy, how do you teach them to deal with the bitterness of their experience?
Yeah. There are two separate questions, the answers to this, much before and after, but currently I actually would tell a person to embrace it, right? Embrace that bitterness. Know it. Understand it. Don't run away from it. Right? If it hurts, it hurts. Makes you angry. My greatest criticism of sometimes the advice of our elders is they want you to move on real quick. And I'm like, no. Know yourself here. Because that's the person that exists as well. And then take what you have learned from that and channel it into something that's going to give your life the value that you want it to have. It's probably a different way of saying the exact same thing, but for me, I turned bitterness into fuel, right? It's okay. And I probably got several instances that I can talk about where I may have, the bitterness may have manifested in ways that's not positive. But I encourage the young people by calling them into mindfulness. So this is language that may resonate in psychotherapy. Be mindful, know who you are, and tell that story, and know that person, and love that person. This is huge, right? Can you love the angry and the bitter person that you actually are having to live with? If you can love that person, then that person can serve you well. If you hate that person, then it becomes, I think, the bane of your existence. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I say, hey, what are you feeling? What are you thinking? Tell me what you're thinking. Okay? And once we get that out, once we know that, then we can manage it. Then it becomes, man, there's a great book that talks about there is a time to be angry. Absolutely. There is a such thing as there's a righteous upset that I feel towards this issue. If anybody in here was mistreated or talked about in a way that was unjust, I would righteously be like, no, that is not okay. And that will be just as much authentically a part of my being as the part of me that says, okay, and I forgive you as well. So we have to be able to manage those, and we grow into maturity to be able to do that. And so that's how I deal with the younger people. My elders are not as receptive to that, to be honest with you. They say, you know what? Don't even deal with it. You gotta forgive. Jump to forgiveness. And that doesn't resonate with me as much, and I don't think it resonates with some of the younger people as much either. But it works for some of them.
I understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
My concerns with people who embrace the bitterness too much,
mm-hmm.
and it manifests in very negative ways,
mm-hmm.
for other people and them.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
there are ways to
mm-hmm.
expiate
mm-hmm.
The bitterness.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that you pretend it's not there.
Correct.
But there are ways to expiate the bitterness so
mm-hmm.
that you don't feel it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that would be one of the possibilities too.
See, I think that's a great conversation. And I'm interested in more of those conversations about that. But for the young people who are looking for a safe space to feel what they're experiencing, they've got to have it. And for me, my experience is giving them that space in the presence of someone like myself or someone who causes them to understand that this is a part of the human experience as well, sometimes diverts some of that behavior because we can say, you know what, I actually know what you're feeling too. So
thank you, Reverend. Two last comments, Reverend Bekele, and then Don, and then I'll give you the last word.
Oh, sure.
Reverend Percy.
I think a question on what we have heard and what we have discussed this evening, and it's the purpose of human relations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to go to discuss about my life, what happened to me in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to be quiet all the time, but when I open my mouth to speak a word, whether it's Vietnamese, Koreans, Hispanic, African Americans, discriminate me right away because of my accent. But they don't know that I speak seven languages. I went to school very well. It bothers me, but you know what? At last I learned a lesson. It's not my problem. It's the person's problem. The person who try to sing it differently as a problem. I do things with Caucasians, my best friend, I'll say this openly, mainly I work with Caucasians in the church. My good friend is an Androids who took my daughter to his office. I'm connected very well, and I don't share what I'm going through.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes this world doesn't treat one another properly. That's why we are here. When I joined OC Human Relations, there are so many things that we can do. I mentioned last time, last week. There are so many things that we can do, ignoring or avoiding or trying to not to focus on the negativity. Instead, how, what can I contribute
mm-hmm.
to bring civility,
mm-hmm.
people to understand and educate. I took responsibility from the commission. I'm very much interested to do the homeless issue
mm-hmm.
because they need help.
Mm-hmm.
We are, as a community, as commissioners, we needed to take some responsibilities and then try to educate people, whether it's about the homeless issue, hate crime, or all those items. It is our responsibility to stand up, educate our communities, discuss issues. We needed to focus and go forward positively, because if we don't do that, who's going to do it? That's what I think.
Amen. Thank you, Bethany. Tom.
Thank you. Tom Darcy.
Sorry.
One of my job here is actually responding to hate crimes and hate incidents in our town, so I actually go out and talk to the victims or talk to the law enforcement agent that deal with the issue. My root was actually, I came from Laos, and in the country of Laos, the lowland Laotian, which is myself
mm-hmm.
and my family, are the Laotian, and there's other minority that live in Laos.
Okay.
Right? Growing up, my parents never had to tell me like, hey, somebody's gonna judge you one of these days, and somebody's gonna call you name because of who you are. Because we're the dominant Laotian lowland people,
mm-hmm.
right? And I didn't know that concept of microaggression
mm-hmm.
until I came here as a refugee
mm-hmm.
to this country, right? And that's the first time I ever experienced racism and pressure towards me of who I am was here. That being said, Dr. Carey, you mentioned about Condoleezza Rice, who had very privileged background and good family to support her along her journey of living life as a very successful woman, not to overreact on some of these microaggressions. I keep thinking about someone like myself who may not have that foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say that is because when I came here at the age of 13, my mom died.
Mm-hmm.
And the age of 16, my dad died.
Mm-hmm.
Right? At the same time, I'm trying to live life and also have to live with some of these microaggressions. And every now and then, I explode
mm-hmm.
to anyone even joking me. But the other thing about something I have learned in my position as a human relations specialist is that in Orange County, African American population is less than 2% of the total population. That always been in the last 17 years been with OC Human Relations that African American is the frequently targeted percentage-wise in terms of hate crime in Orange County. And I said that is because the last 2 weeks of the hate crime that reported to us involved African American families. One case being during October 31st, the night of Halloween, a gentleman walking down the sidewalk, a group of teenagers drove up next to him, stopped throwing eggs at him, and called him the N-word and told him to get out of this town. And the other one involved a couple in their 60s going shopping, grocery shopping, got into a confrontation with another customer, an uninvolved customer got involved and told him to get out of their his community and using the N-word. And when they followed them to go take a picture of the license plate, he pulled over with his car and pointed a pistol at them. When I have to respond to this kind of thing, what do I say?
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Don. I mean, it's a macroaggression, those two stories for sure. Mm-hmm. Good. Reverend, last word.
Yeah, man. I just want to thank you that I'm on being for us all. Thank you for sharing that story. It saddens my heart. I'm really just one story, to be honest. And I think I'm fortunate enough to have people who will ask the question, right? I don't think everybody has that same privilege. I'll close by saying this is part of this story collecting process that I'm trying. I think stories transform people. So the more ground that we create for people to share their stories, how they want to share, you know, and us hearing it, not even to give them a solution, just to hear it, teaching them how to share their stories, I think the world is a much better place to live in. So.
Thank you so much, Reverend. You are a blessing to our community and to this commission, and starting off sort of our new way forward with passion and education and belief helpfulness. So thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Let's move on to just the last couple items. Item 10.
Yes, commissioner questions.
Any questions from the commission?
Is there a water fountain?
I think it's right out there. Is a water fountain?
Yes.
Yes, right out here.
This right?
Seeing none, item 11.
Announcements from commissioners.
Anybody have any announcements? So sort of upcoming things of interest, things you think the commission would be interested in, your own personal stuff that we should know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, last item is adjournment of commission meeting.
Do I need a motion for that, Robin?
No.
Then I adjourn the meeting. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah.
We'll see you next month. If you have items you want to